encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Welcome back, listeners. This is the Busby Bay Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined by Polly Questel and Nathan Heinschel. Ready for a new season, sort of. Not really, but here we are. How's it going, boys?
New manager, new players, same vibes?
Are the vibes? Well, first of all, no new players. A new player.
There's a parenthesis around the S on the end of player because Christian Eriksen is still not official.
I would say I miss talking to you guys, but we talk like every day, and I kind of wish that the break was a bit longer.
Yeah.
The difference is we don't see each other's faces over Skype, so like this is nice.
Right. Yeah, this part's nice.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I don't have my cameras on.
We had a few dull weeks. And I don't even think I thought I was like, oh, it's pretty dull, but I'm not terribly bored. And then the players came back to training and I went, oh, right, this blows. The internet sucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big part of it. And that's, you know, the part that we were never going to escape anyway is the Manchester United Twitterverse. But, you know, there's some things to talk about now. So it's our duty as Manchester United podcasters to get back on and talk about things. So
could be worse. We could be Star Wars podcasters. Like that's actually a worse fan base. So.
Oh yeah.
They just dislike everything Star Wars.
I mean, have you known a Manchester United fan to actually like Manchester United?
At times.
In the good old days.
Certainly not the ones on the internet, on the interwebs. They all suck.
Before the dark times. Empire.
So which post Sir Alex Ferguson manager is most likely to be JJ Abrams? Is it Solskjaer?
No, that's a good question, and my hot take is Eric Ten Hag.
I mean, I think Solskjaer might actually be a good one because so JJ Abrams come back with The Force Awakens, Star Wars, you know, makes its grand appearance back in pop culture. You know, some not great reviews. Some people, you know, think it's too similar to 4, which is fair. But, you know, not bad. Pretty good. Everyone's like, yeah, Star Wars is back. And then by the end of it, you're just like, oh, it's too fan service-y, you know?
So
Cristiano Ronaldo comes back.
Much like Palpatine, doesn't make sense why he's back, but he's back.
Yeah, somehow yeah. Cristiano Ronaldo has returned.
My hot take is that Ten Hag is kind of the Force Awakens, the J.J. Abrams to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. In that it's like, it's very dressed up, and it's like, he's got a resume, and then you're looking around being like, wait, like I've seen all of this before. This is the same.
I will say, Ryan Johnson.
Is Solskjaer going to be, we're getting way too far into this, by the way, but is Solskjaer going to be like the Dave Filoni Clone Wars years between the movies and like in the middle of that was the Disney buyout? Where like now everyone's like, oh, maybe he was onto something.
Go back and check the text. This is too meta. I told you, I acknowledge that the cartoons are there, but I don't, the cartoons aren't there for me.
I will say Ryan Johnson did a better job of trying to kill the past than Ralph Rangnick did, though. That is for sure.
Yeah, new reports suggest that Ralph Rangnick actually worked. He sent a lot of emails in January trying to kill the past.
But it also kind of makes sense of, you know, just the mood of where everything was by the end of it, that, you know, he kind of knew he wasn't going to be there anywhere and nobody was listening to him. So right. Anyway,
so we had Leia float through space. Yeah, no, this the
more sensitive.
Everything here is making sense, except for the fact that now, like, it basically sets Eric Ten Hag up to be the Rise of Skywalker.
Well, at least we'll have that thousand ships in Lando moment, right?
Right. We mean at least. That was awful.
Straight from the Avengers.
Anyway, we need to not get more into this. So, Manchester United's number one target this summer, which we knew going into the summer, was Frankie de Jong. Since the last time we podcasted, not too much has changed. Supposedly, there is more agreed upon on Manchester United's end than on Barcelona's end. And that is down to today, the news coming out that Barcelona have really backloaded his wages by sort of putting off payments, similar to what they did with Gerard Piqué. I'm assuming what happened with Lionel Messi as well, as and how his contract situation got so messy. And this is a strategy Barcelona have done throughout their financial struggles to, you know, try and offset costs and just put them off till later when they expect they'll have more money. But the problem is, now Frankie de Jong is like, well, if I'm going to leave, then I want the money you owed me, because those were wages he was supposed to be paid. What, the last two seasons were the ones that were deferred? So now it's a situation of, well, Barcelona don't want to pay him that money.
Barcelona are hilarious. Because they've been in this financial, and this is the reason why, like, not to go Super League, but like, this is the reason why fan-based ownership doesn't work, because they have presidents that run for president, and as part of their campaigns, they promise we'll sign someone, or we'll, you know, we're going to sign the big guy. And eventually all these presidents keep spending money to keep the fan base happy, and then they run out of money. And Barcelona are in this situation now where they are doing their base, that deal that they struck where they like sold a percentage of their TV rights. They're basically at the part where like Joan Laporta is going to be at the plasma donation, like selling plasma for money, blood plasma. Like, and it's so obvious that they're doing this, but like, they're trying to save face, because eventually when the dust settles, like the way that they're structured is the money comes out of the top guys of like the owner's pocket. Like Laporta's on the hook for a lot of money. All the guys at the head of the table, they're on the hook for a lot of this money, which I guess is the one saving grace to this, but they're rich people. They'll figure out how to get out of it. So they're just trying to put on this PR spin of like, no, we're fine. We're good. We're going to sign Robert Lewandowski. When in reality, they don't even have the money to like get rid of their own player. So yeah, as Colin said, they deferred payments during COVID. They got their whole team like astronomically to take wage cuts and basically say, you'll pay us later. And instead of like investing that money and saving it and being like, we're going to need this for, they used it on like signing new players, which, you know, even last year they couldn't register players, and how they'd register Lewandowski or anybody.
I don't think they can register their team as is right now.
Right. And they couldn't, and then they went and signed Pierre Aubameyang during January. Yeah. Like, they are the example of a team that just doesn't understand how to run their money. And Frankie de Jong is entirely in there. I was saying like, it's kind of getting pathetic that United are sitting there begging Frankie de Jong to sign for them, and he's just like, nah, I don't want to leave Barcelona. But now it's more clear of like, he's willing, but these contracts are simple. You sign a contract, you're owed money. And this is where it comes down to with every player, is Barcelona basically signed a contract to say, for arbitrary sake, we're going to make up numbers here. Let's say 5-year contract, 50 million euros, 10 million euros a year. But over 5 years, that's how it breaks down. But over 5 years, you're going to receive a base of 50 million euros from us. And then when you defer that money and say, I'm only going to get 2 million in those first years, they still owe him that 50. And basically, and that's how all the contracts work. And it's basically when another team comes around and says, we want that player, the player can't just walk out of your contract. That's why transfer fees come in, is the team is compensating the other team for letting that player break his contract and leave early. And if United were coming, when it's a team like Bristol City, and you're making 150,000 pounds a season, if that, and United come in and offer you £1 million, you say, I'm leaving, and don't worry about the remainder of the money on my contract, guys. You could keep it. I'm off. because I'm about to make more money. When it's a situation of, well, you're not going to make as much money, or in Frankie DeYoung's situation of, you're probably making about the same amount of money, but he's owed money from the past 2 years. You're going to sit there and go, no, yo, like, I don't want to just give up all this money that I'm owed. But this is why United had to pay Alexis $10 million to leave, because he had all this money due on his contract. They managed to strike an agreement to not pay all of it to him, but Alexis very well could have sat there and been like, no, you owe me all that money. Or it's like, why Phil Jones is still on the team? Because he's got a contract. The team can't just say, you're no longer part of this team. If they do say that, they still owe him all that money remaining. And therefore the team has just said, well, you're a good person in the dressing room. You don't complain. You don't complain that you don't play. It's nice to have a sixth center back on the chance that what happens against Wolves happens again and everybody gets hurt and we need you. So we might as well keep you on the team because we owe you that money anyway. And Frankie De Jong is basically just saying, Barcelona, you owe me the money. Pay up. And Barcelona are just trying not to. And then they've done this with Gerard Piqué too. He deferred a lot of money. And now they're trying to get out of that by basically saying, you acted unprofessionally, aka you had an affair on your wife, Shakira, and we don't want that at our club, therefore we're kicking you off the team. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. You still owe him the money.
Right. I mean, if it did work like that, I think clubs would be using that loophole a lot more.
Martial might not have a club.
Yeah, but man, he's not even on the topics list, but we need to get to that at some point because he might be our starting striker.
Club season.
Yeah. Like you said, Polly, this is pretty funny because it seems like the third summer in a row now where Barcelona have just been like scraping together whatever they can to still have a functioning team for the next season, but also still make signings that, you
make
know,
no sense.
Yeah, but like, I guess would sell, because like, why would you invest 50 million euros in a striker that you're probably only going to have, 50 million euro transfer fee, not even considering what they would pay Lewandowski, but you know, you probably only get him for another 3 years or so.
I think they're bluffing on that. Like, that's the PR push to sit around on their fan base and be like, we're not poor, guys, don't worry, it's fine. They're trying to send out the message that we're not down bad, that we are okay, that it's business as usual, to maintain that strong, because
investors as well.
Right. And you know, like right now, this is set, like Manchester United are going to be the losers of this deal, because at a certain point, in order to get this deal pushed through, they're probably going to offer Frankie De Jong like more money and be like, we'll make up some of the difference, when it's Barcelona who owe him the damn money. But what is clear, what is crystal clear, is Barcelona just cannot afford to have Frankie De Jong on their books this season. They need to get rid of him. And that gives United all the leverage. They should be revisiting that transfer fee and being like, we're not giving you that much. You need to get rid of him.
Yeah,
and they're not going to do that.
If they're going to be in a situation where, I mean, they're going to have to offer him more money anyway, then yeah, they probably should leverage that in negotiations. But
you just say, we'll pay you the 15 million, but like Barcelona, we're only giving you 50 or 45.
Yeah.
And therefore he'll leave. He gets off your books. You get something. They're not going to do it. They're going to end up just paying more. And from a scenario where Barcelona has, this is from day one, this has been a situation where neither club has come at this negotiation from a position of power because they've both handled it so terribly.
I mean, it is it's a new regime for both clubs this summer, isn't it? Was it Laporta? He wasn't the president when Messi left, was he?
No, wasn't that the whole thing? Was like Messi was like, I'll stay if Laporta becomes president again. And then it was like, we really
just never mind. Yeah, I don't know if the election like happened or anything. Anyway, yeah, it's a whole mess. And it becomes not funny when it affects Manchester United, because it looked like they were on track to at least have two or three players coming in before they left for their summer tour.
Don't even have the option of bluffing and being like, we're going to go after somebody else, because they've made it clear there's Frankie de Jong and there's only Frankie de Jong.
Right.
And that's the problem, because they need more than Frankie de Jong.
Yeah.
It's like it's a tale of two stories, too, because and maybe this is a good segue. It seemed like Manchester United did really good, really competent, and very swift business with Tyrone Malacia signing. And yet they cannot seem to get the De Jong deal to work at all, even though you've got Barcelona that has signed Ferran Torres, who they technically probably can't register right now. That was reported when they signed him or bought him back from Manchester City. They want Lewandowski. They just announced Andreas Christensen 2 days ago.
Chelsea. So like Marcos Alonso going there too.
Yeah. So like, how can Manchester United not just drop their nuts on the table and be like, this is what we're going to give you because you need this money, because you didn't get
how do these players agree to these deals? Like, they have agents who are supposed to be smart people and businessmen and like attuned to this. And the one thing agents care about is my client getting paid? Because that means I'm getting paid. So wouldn't you think that, like, you'd be like, we need an ironclad. Like, you got to show me your financials here, because we don't are you going to be able to pay and play us?
Yeah. I do wonder whether they're actually going to make that.
I think Barcelona, just on name alone, is like the American housing market right now, where if you ask to have an inspection before you put down an offer, they just throw your offer out because they're like, we don't need to get an inspection. We can still sell this house without an inspection. Like, you don't need to look at our books. We're Barcelona, baby.
Right. It's literally just a matter of, oh, trust us. Like, we're talking to the Bank of Spain. It's like, Bank of Spain denied your loan. And they're like, oh, well, like, we'll figure it out. It just seems very, very Mediterranean. You wouldn't, like.
TLDR. United, just get this one over the line. You've definitely telegraphed how badly you want this player. So,
well, it's not on United anymore. Now it's on Frankie de Jong being like, well, wait, you owe me all this money. I'm not letting you off the hook for that. And nor should he. And look, because it was just July 1st and this was a whole big deal in Mets land, where like Bobby Bonilla deferred all that money for 25 years and now he's getting paid 1.3 million a year or 1.1 million a year. That's for 25 a sick years. Deal. It's an unbelievable deal. It's also a good deal for the Mets. It's cheaper to do this than to pay him out than to like give him
like money. 1 million on that's how they got David right. 2020 is nothing.
Right. Like Bobby Bonilla actually took a bad deal. So if I'm Frankie de Jong, like also don't do that because at this point, who knows if Barcelona are even going to exist in 15 years.
You know, Barcelona's sitting there going like, well, you know, if you just took care of all the delinquent wages, like we could sell them to you pretty easily.
I mean, hey, look, if they want to pay his 20 million in remaining wages, knock 20 million off the transfer fee. Like,
right.
There we go.
Do you remember that? You remember that scene in The Wolf of Wall Street where he's trying to teach them how to sell?
Sell me this pen.
And it's like, you created demand. That's basically how most negotiations go, is one side has the demand, has the supply, and the other side is the demand. And it's and someone has more power than the other. And somehow in this situation, neither team has had any power. It's truly remarkable.
Comedy of errors. Manchester United, we're back, baby.
Speaking of transfer power struggles, it's time that we talk about he who we would like to not name. Cristiano Ronaldo,
supposed club legend.
Yeah, has waited until July to make it known that he doesn't want to play for Manchester United next season. He would like to play for a team in the Champions League, and I would assume a chance to win the Champions League. But those options are pretty slim, and as we learned today, it does not seem like Barcelona or Bayern Munich are going to take the bait on that one. So now Jorge Mendes is in a situation where he's just like shopping around for clubs pretty openly. Manchester United are frustrated because, you know, they were operating under the assumption that, like, okay, well, at least we'll have a center forward next season. And now it's looking like that's not going to happen. Ronaldo hasn't shown up for training. He's claimed that it was a family issue, but he's been training at Portugal's facility for the last week or so. Yeah. And then, you know, of course, all the fallout from that with his Twitter stands and, you know, people still inventing reasons to make excuses for him and whatnot. But, yeah, it's put United in a bad situation because apart from Ronaldo, there's next two strikers are Anthony Martial and then Charlie McNeil. So
can I defend Ronaldo for a second?
Ooh. Sure. I want to see where this goes.
So you see on Twitter, like there are people out there saying, oh, why is he doing this now? Because he waited. He was excited by the prospect of Ten Hag and he waited for the board to back it. They're trying to blame the Glazers. He waited for the board to back Ten Hag and they're not. They're moving slow. So now he's reacting. If you believe that, open up a book, several books, and just read and educate yourself. What I will say is, as we sit here and call him unprofessional for waiting until now to say he doesn't want to play for Manchester United anymore, well, I'll defend him and say that is not true. He was angling for a move as far back as December. He did not just announce this or make this claim. Every time things got dicey with United last season, there were several rumors from people that often have contact with Jorge Mendes that said Ronaldo was thinking about leaving and might want to leave the club in January and looking for another club. And, oh, Ronaldo's going to try to leave if they don't qualify for the Champions League. And I forget what happened in March, but there was that March international break where basically – I forget. Like, it was basically like every club kind of said no, and immediately there was that a report that just said something happened in the – I really forget what it was, but the next day there was a report that basically said Cristiano Ronaldo is committed to Manchester United regardless of whether they finish in the Champions League or not. And like I've said it on the show, I've said it in Slack, I've said it in text to you, is – you read that report and you could just see Jorge Mendes sitting there on his phone next to Ronaldo and just shaking his head no, being like, I've tried. Nobody wants you. Like, nobody's coming in. Nobody's rescuing us. And that's when it was like he's resigned to playing for United. And he coincidentally now decided, again, I want to leave, right after Jorge Mendes has a meeting with Chelsea's new owner, who has declared himself the club's sporting director and wants to make a splash and might be the one person dumb enough to make this kind of deal.
What a sight that would be, right? Ronaldo and Chelsea blue. I mean, I'm here for it.
Well, it's funny because with Ronaldo being shopped towards Chelsea, you know, we need a club like Manchester United to swoop in and steal that deal because we can't let a club legend go to a club rival.
Let me say this. That's the holdup right now, is United don't want to sell him to Chelsea because they don't want to sell him to a direct rival. If United don't sell Ronaldo to Chelsea, Chelsea are not a direct rival. They're competing on different playing fields this year. If they sell him to Chelsea, they might be competing for the same thing. It might be an automatic spot to the Europa League and not the Conference League, because Ronaldo is not the only problem in this squad, and this squad is worse right now than it was a year ago.
But, right.
And they have not addressed several issues in the squad. So,
but allegedly they're bringing in Sterling though.
So yeah.
Well,
so,
this is the thing about Chelsea, though. Like they're going over this like makeover almost, but I mean Sterling probably fits what Tuchel wants from his forward players, but Ronaldo doesn't. Like, what's Tuchel going to?
I mean, here's the thing about Sterling. Like, yes, but you're also just signing a guy that you have an abundance of. Wide forwards and interior forwards Chelsea are not at a lack lacking for. Like, Hakim Ziyech is on his way out because he's on the outs, but you have Christian Pulisic, you have Callum Hudson-Odoi, you have Timo Werner, you have.
Right, but like, I mean, if you look at Liverpool and City, that's the gold standard for competing in the Premier League. You probably need more of those kind of options.
Right. So, but so now they so you need to find an option. What Chelsea are doing is the classic mistake of Chelsea just got a player that Manchester City were ready to get rid of and wanted to get rid of and were ready to cast off. That's why they let him go to Chelsea. They don't care that he's going to a quote unquote rival because they know something. What they know is, his best years are behind them. Raheem Sterling broke in when he was like 17 years old. He's 27 now. He's going to turn 28. They spent £45 million on him. That is, and I tweeted about this today. Like, the fact that City just got their money back for Raheem Sterling. They spent $50 million, $49 million on Raheem Sterling when he was 20 years old. And they got eight seasons, the eight best seasons, the eight prime seasons of Raheem Sterling. And they're going to sell him now for almost exactly what they paid for him 8 years later is outrageous. The fact that another club is letting this happen is mind-boggling. And it's because they've got a new American owner who wants to make splashy signings, but he's also going full Jerry Jones and saying, I want to be the one that runs the ship here. And he doesn't really know what he's doing because he's doing the thing where he's like, I know that player. I know that player. These are the big players. Oh, that player's Premier League proven, which means nothing. How many players are Premier League proven and go on to new clubs and stink?
But instead of taking advantage of this, Manchester United are going to be like, we don't want to sell Ronaldo.
Preventing Chelsea from themselves. Like, look, I think Raheem Sterling is a good, is an unbelievable player, and he's still a good player. But the way, like, everybody react, like when I tweeted about it, the amount of people that just said, well, he's entering his prime. He's 27, about to turn 28. He's not entering his prime. He's on the backside of it. Look at an age curve. Age curves for me one time. Attacking players peak at around the age of 26. That's based on when they break in at 18, 19 years old. Sterling broke in at 17. Rooney was washed at 26 because he came when he was 16. You get about 8 years at the top level, 8 to 10 years at the top level before you, and you peak around 26. And then you have 2 or 3 years where it's a little bit less, but still good. That's the backside of your prime. And then you fall off a cliff. It doesn't go. Players don't go from scoring 21 goals to 18 goals to 17 to 15 to 13 to 10. It typically goes from they're scoring around 21, then they have a season where they score 25. That's your peak. They come back down 23, 21, 18, 10. So if that's what you want to spend $45 million on, there's a reason that $45 million, that if you look at all the signings that cost that much or more in the last few years, you're going to get Griezmann, Hazard, and that's about it for players that are that old signing for that much money. The money is younger because teams have realized, I don't want to pay you for what this player did for you. I want to pay you for what this player is going to do for me. And Sterling will have a few good seasons, but he's on the right team also, because if he's not good, they can drop him pretty quickly and easily. And Chelsea are always good enough that they can hide that kind of player. Like, nobody will bat an eyelash if Raheem Sterling finishes the season with like 8 goals and 5 assists. But is that what you want to pay $45 million for, with the fact that he's getting older? And on top of that, we've never seen football like this before. We have all this information on how football used to be played and how and when players start to break down. We've never seen that coming off of a season where we basically didn't have a preseason. We crammed a 10-month season into 9 months. Right after that, we played an international tournament. Then we came back and played another season with extra international matches. And then had a short off season to go into a new season where we're going to play 5 games in the first month. And in November, we're taking a break for the World Cup. And I would always hesitate around 28-year-old players, but now I'd be extra hesitant because they're probably going to break down at a faster rate than they used to.
So with all that said,
this whole thing and send it to the We Ain't Got No History podcast.
Right. So with all that said, though, how much do we think United could get for Ronaldo from Chelsea?
Just put him on their doorstep. Just put him on their doorstep and say, take his wages and, like, I don't know, send us a cake. Buy us dinner.
Send us Callum Hudson-Odoi.
I would want at least some of the, what was it, $12 million they paid last. I mean, give us $10 million and take his wages.
Give us the buyback rights to Tammy Abraham.
I'll say whatever I have to.
I wouldn't go for Tammy Abraham because I'm skeptical. I like Tammy Abraham. I think he's really good. I really wish they would have tried to sign him from Chelsea back in 2019 when United fans were busy trying to be like, Rashford's better. And Chelsea fans were busy being like, Tammy Abraham scores a lot of goals, but he's terrible. I don't trust strikers coming from Italy anymore.
I knew he was going to say that part.
There's just too many. There's just that league is a haven for strikers.
Lukaku, really Ronaldo.
Zlatan, like, it's a haven for strikers.
But what if they're free and Argentinian and 28 years old?
No, like we just said,
Dybala literally checks all the boxes that Pauly just railed against. He's 28, an attacking player, has mileage.
He checks even more
coming
boxes.
Coming from Italy.
He checks even more boxes.
Injury history.
Why didn't you come 3 years ago when we were interested in you? That broke down. And what's your motivation? Because why would Paulo Dybala even be interested in playing for United if he hasn't gotten a guarantee that Ronaldo won't be here?
Because maybe that's the hang up for all these transfers.
It could be. Don't forget that the reason that Paulo Dybala was in such advanced negotiations with us 3 years ago was he wanted out of Juventus because he did not want to play with Ronaldo, and him and Ronaldo did not get along. So if he's voluntarily showing up to United, who, yes, Ronaldo only has a year left on his contract, but if United don't sell him this summer when there are offers, don't rule out them being so dumb as to not trigger the automatic extension on his contract next year too. Why would you? What's your incentive to come and link up with that guy again, other than, oh, they're paying me a boatload of money, in which case it's like, well, what are you here for? You're probably here for the boatload of money.
It would blow my mind if Dybala comes to United the same summer that his close friend Paul Pogba goes back to Juventus. Like,
I found that weird that he's like still leaving. I'm like, oh, man, yeah. I want to stay.
Well, I think that's Juventus because they already had to probably move things around just to pay Pogba reasonable wages enough to make him go there and not PSG. But
well, they're also offloading DeLict apparently, so fire sale at Juventus.
They were trying to do that. Yeah. And that's to make room for Juventus are not as well off financially as they like to make it seem either.
Barcelona without the titles.
They have titles. They have
not the Champions League.
Right. The DeLict thing is interesting to say the least, it trends back to like my Eric Ten Hag might be the JJ Abrams for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Getting the band back together, like Nathan said.
In a different way. Like the way that everybody is talking about Ten Hag right now is like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
At times last season, when everybody was full on like being like Pep Guardiola wouldn't even win with this squad, which is true because the squad is garbage. Well, and because his midfielders can't play with the ball at their feet. Now everybody's like, oh, well, Ten Hag will come in and make them better. And it's like, oh, Ten Hag's better than Guardiola now? Like, he can do more magic, but also everybody's just being like, we should go after all these Ajax players. And it's like, huh. It'd be interesting if De Jong, De Ligt, and Ziyech all left their teams in the same year.
I just hope everybody has patience for when it looks like Louis Van Gaal's coaching the season.
It's going to. It's either, here's the thing. It's either going to look like Louis van Gaal is coaching, or it's going to look like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The biggest difference tactically between like Ten Hag and Solskjaer right now is that Ten Hag's not talking about his ideal version. Like Ten Hag, if you go back and watch his interviews at Ajax, and like Suede sent me a bunch of them, and he just talks about, okay, yeah, I want to play this way, but really what we have to do is be able to play multiple different systems and be able to play on the counterattack and be able to do this and based on our opponent change. And he is someone that likes to play a 4-2-3-1, and they beat Real Madrid in the Champions League by playing on the counterattack. And it's all the things that Solskjaer did. The fans all think he's going to come in and put out a 4-3-3, which is like, why would he do that? You don't have the personnel for that. Your best player isn't good in a 4-3-3. And the manager, it's not really that, like, what he likes, the 4-2-3-1. And the like Solskjaer just always talked about, oh, we want to play front foot football and we want to get at you and run and attack. And then he would go and set up in a counterattack so that he could get a result and play a back three so that he can get a result. Like at least Ten Hag is like, yeah, we got to change systems sometimes.
All right. So, what was the third topic? Right. Tyrell Malacia signs for Manchester United this week. Supposedly an agreement is reached with Christian Eriksen to arrive as a free agent. I guess the thing I want to bring up about both of these transfers is that neither of them really address the needs that we've been talking about forever. And it doesn't seem like Ten Hag's other signings are going to do that either. So, like, Malacia, you know, he's an upgrade on Telles. If Luke Shaw is, you know, going to get hurt for an extended period of time again, probably good to have somebody Ten Hag trusts more than Telles to come in and fill that role. But also, right back is still an issue. Central midfield, you know, Eriksen and Frankie de Jong are players that will probably adapt more to what Ten Hag wants from his midfielders than what McTominay or Fred could do, but it's still, there's that big hole in the middle of the park. And then center forward, you know, Ronaldo wanting out, Martial behind him, no one really being looked at for that position. And then center back, when, you know, you've got three reliable starters there. I mean, I guess Bailly and Jones are both looking for exits this summer, so Lisandro Martinez makes sense there, but still,
are they reliable?
Well, you've got Maguire, Lindelof, Varane. I'd say
Rafael Varane was pretty much made of glass last season, and again, the added minutes and the World Cup this year. Are you getting more out of him?
That's fair.
Well, is he going to even really play that many minutes for France this year?
Yeah, I think that is a reasonable question as well. So is it just that we have way more needs now that, you know, these holes are being looked over, or are we going to have to see Erik ten Hag think, yeah, I can make this work with Scott McTominay as the midfield anchor?
Nathan, you want to take a crack at it?
I mean, unless either they are doing some incredible back channeling on some deals that we don't know about yet, or they're potentially looking at it practically like what they did with Sancho, where there's a couple players maybe Ten Hag wants, but they're looking at the price and knowing that they could get it cheaper next year if they just hold out and, you know, ride the wave this year. Maybe hopefully Ten Hag over the last, you know, training camp, spent what, a week and a half going so far, maybe he's liking something he's seeing in the academy, which would be promising, because we still have these questions about guys like Jimmy Garner, who we would like to see, you know, where's he at this point after playing on loan for so long. So I don't love, because right now it does seem like we're waiting until the 25th hour or the 24th hour, and then we're going to just ride with Scott McTominay and McFred again, which
it's bleak.
It's not what you want. It's definitely not what you want.
They're addressing, was a backup left back a need in the squad? Yes. The problem is that was a need 2 years ago, and then they whiffed on it so bad. So, yeah, if you're an upgrade on Alex Tellez, then, and it's hard not to be, then that's a good move. Christian Eriksen.
We replace Juan Mata with Christian Eriksen.
So that's the question. If you replaced Juan Mata with Christian Eriksen, that's fine. But if you got to replace Paul Pogba too.
Yep.
And that's real. Like, everybody's letting their disdain and their hatred of Paul Pogba and the individual performance of Paul Pogba. He's inconsistent. He didn't do this. Over the fact of, like, yes, but when he played, the team much better. And when he played, the team much better than it was when he didn't play. You were missing something big. And we have, especially not this past season, but the two seasons before that, you have very good samples of team could win with him, could not win without him. But even with him, team was not good enough. And this is my concern here, is we seem to be treating this summer like it's any other season of, like, get four players in the door. Like, they have downgraded the expectations so low to the point now where people are like, three signings plus a free transfer, get four players in the door, and that's great. How many players just walked out? Yes, the squad was overly bloated, but, like, Donny van de Beek was sent away in January because two managers looked at him and said no. Jesse Lingard, yeah, he's extra. Juan Mata has proven to be a pretty good player in very small doses because his legs were going. So if you bring in Christian Eriksen to replace him and he can give you more, that's great. But it's already starting to sound like that you're going to be asking Christian Eriksen to carry some of the Pogba left brunt. And you're going to be asked, and suddenly, like, the way that this is going to work is Eriksen will come in, he'll get some chances in August, he'll probably get off to a great start, and suddenly, like, he's in the team every week. And now you've got a 31-year-old with a heart condition who will play the brunt of the minutes for Denmark at the World Cup, going to suddenly make himself undroppable, and you're probably going to wear him out early on in the season, the same way that they wore out Ronaldo last year, and he was terrible throughout the winter until he got onto a one-game-a-week schedule. And you're going to look at it in January and be like, Christian Eriksen hasn't scored in 12 games and hasn't had an assist in 9 games, and he's not putting up the numbers anymore. And it's like, yeah, because we relied on a 31-year-old. And that's, like, that would be bad in and of itself. Like I said, the concern is they're treating this like a normal season, and it's not. There's a World Cup in the middle of it. We've never seen something like this. But what we know is you're going to need players, preferably young guys who have energy, preferably young guys who are up and coming that have energy that haven't quite made their national team yet. Like, ones that national teams are looking at being like, you're going to play a good role in 2026, but it's this guy's swan song in 2022. You're staying at home. But as soon as that, like, when we hit the next round of qualifiers or whatever, or if it's a European team getting ready for Euro 2024, you're going to be a fixture in this team. Go after guys like that, and they're not going. So, like, they've addressed
Italian players.
Basically, Italian players don't leave Italy.
They got the winter off. We should be looking at Italian players.
Italian players go to Toronto.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
they don't leave Italy. They need to address that. They've addressed these, like, little areas in the squad. But even if Frankie De Jong comes in, all right, you still got to replace Nemanja Matic. And, like, let's say Frankie De Jong comes in, he's a replacement for Paul Pogba. You still have to replace Nemanja Matic. No one's coming in and doing that. Even if you do replace Nemanja Matic, okay, well, four midfielders was not enough last year. It was not enough the year before that. We've been sitting there for years now saying, no, they need more, because you have to up, like, Malacia, the way that you upgraded on Alex Tellez, someone has to do that with Scott McTominay. I wrote about this today. It's on my Substack. Of, if you do want to ride with McTominay and what you've got, then Ten Hag has to be very stubborn in saying this is how we're going to play, and this is the style we're going to play, and we're not changing from that. And if certain players can't do it, you're going to be dropped from the squad. And if we don't have anybody to replace you, i.e. in midfield, we're just going to keep doing it. We're not going to make sacrifices to try to get results, because that's what Solskjaer did. Solskjaer ended up in a situation very quickly where he was like, He looked at that team and he said, the only way to play is on the counterattack. And he looked at his midfield of McTominay and Fred and went, you guys can't move the ball. And he started just trying to figure out ways to avoid having the midfield do that. And he went, Harry Maguire, you're very good with the ball, so we're going to have you carry it forward a lot. Luke Shaw, you're exceptionally good at this. We're going to have you do a lot of midfield things with the ball. We're going to have Juan Mata playing on the right wing coming into midfield, or we're going to have Paul Pogba on the left wing coming into midfield. The issue was, is like when you didn't have Pogba or Mata in there and you had two more forwards like Greenwood, Rashford, Ilanga, Martial, any of the forward type rather than the midfield type, you didn't have that help coming from midfield. Or when you rested Luke Shaw and had Alex Telles, and you're so overly reliant on your left back to carry all this brunt of responsibility, Alex Telles doesn't do those things to begin with, but like you're not going to find someone that does it to the level Luke Shaw does it to begin with. So now when Luke Shaw's not in the team, you're screwed because your midfielders are used to not having to do this. They partially because they can't. So like when you compensate in so many ways, you're just holding your, it's just going to create issues further down the line of like, if Malacia can't do the things that Luke Shaw does in terms of build up and possession and advancing the ball, then when Luke Shaw's not in the team, that's a drop off and it's going to hurt you. And they need more players and they're just not getting them. And yeah, wasn't good enough. And now they're merely replacing players and they're not even doing that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the same situation when, you know, Solskjaer first came in and it was like, all right, we got to get rid of the deadwood. So we're seeing a bunch of players leave, but yeah, like Pauly said, the replacement just isn't there. Like Andreas Pereira might be going to Fulham, and you're like, well, that is a midfielder. It's not a midfielder we want, but it's still like another midfielder leaving, and somebody not coming in.
Even the deadwood was like, Alexis somewhere in the middle there. Romelu Lukaku was Solskjaer actually had a plan for him, and he was planning on using him. But then it's like Valencia, Ashley Young, Fellaini. It's all those extra pieces. Paul Pogba was a very critical piece of this team that made them much better. And having said that, when he was in there, they still weren't good enough. So not only do you need to replace Paul Pogba, but you need to address the areas around him. And Frankie de Jong might be that replacement for Paul Pogba, but now you got to find someone to play next to him because Fred and McTominay aren't going to cut it.
I keep seeing these 11s that put De Jong at the base with Eriksen and Bruno Fernandes as like eights, and without getting into all the reasons as to why that wouldn't work, Frankie De Jong this past season, Xavi's like idea for how can I have Gavi and Pedri in their preferred positions and still have Frankie involved is to try and see how Frankie would work in this more Busquets role, and it just didn't work.
But Frankie did say like he likes to be the guy that picks up the ball off the defenders.
Right.
But he's not a passer.
He's not a ball winner either. Like not at a high level.
Well, that's a different piece that's coming out next week of like your defensive midfielder does not have to be the ball winner. He's not a passer. Like his carry numbers are great. So are McTominay's. And this is something I wrote like a month ago of like what comes next? What do you do once you carry it forward? Is if you're not If you carry it forward and then just stop and go, oh, I got to play it square, or you just give it to somebody, you got to be able to play it quick and play it and pass. And I don't know if that's right. Like, that's what you got in Paul Pogba. And it's going to be very hard to find. You didn't get other things, but it's going to be very hard to replace that. But you need to. So in that case, you can't just replace it with one guy. You need both your midfielders to do those jobs. Why people, again, like, Colin, you said you keep seeing these 11s because people love the idea of having a 4-3-3. And it's like, why would you put Bruno Fernandes there when he spent the entire second half of the season last year dropping into midfield as a third midfielder because of the fact that Fred McTominay couldn't move the ball forward and someone needed to do it. And he was atrocious there. He's much better as a number 10. Like you have a player who is a phenomenal number 10. Why would you not play him in that role? Why would you play him in a role that he's much worse at? And then, as you mentioned way back when, the striker thing, which is if Ronaldo leaves. And I think that a big reason that they're standing firm and they don't want to sell Ronaldo is because they blew up their – they had all these targets in mind. You look at the way that they went through this thing in, during the Solskjaer era was – okay, like they lost Lukaku, and then they went, we're not going to go and sign the wrong player here. They went after Haaland, and when they didn't get Haaland, they signed Ighalo to a loan and said, we're going to just cover, we're just going to get through this season and address this in the summer. And in the summer, they looked at the market and they went, not really great. Let's get a short-term option here in Cavani, because in 2 years, Haaland's going to be available and some other guys are going to be available. They had targets, and then a year later, they blew up that plan to sign Ronaldo on a 2 to maybe 3 year deal. And to then, so basically by doing that, they're admitting all the guys that we were going to go after next year, we're not going after them now. And they let them sign elsewhere. They don't have targets for this season. Perhaps they have targets for next season, but now they don't want to get caught with their pants down, which they did. They were caught with their pants down when they signed the guy, but it's more of, we don't have targets for this guy, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. United's center, their most productive season that they've had from a striker, I think since Van Persie, came the year that everybody was like, how could they sell their only striker and leave us without a recognizable and proven goal scorer? If your striker does a lot of other things that increase the goal scoring of other players, like, he doesn't need to lead the team in goals.
Marcial Remontada.
Yeah, I mean, look, Rashford's a better player when Martial plays. Bruno scores more when Martial plays. Iguanga would probably fit that. We don't know, but he would probably fit that category too, because he's a very similar player to Rashford. Sancho could probably play with anybody. Donny van de Beek is probably someone that would benefit from playing with a striker more similar to Rashford, more similar to Martial than like a Cavani or a Zlatan or a Ronaldo. Like, Van de Beek's best season at Ajax came when he had a striker that was very similar to Anthony Martial.
Glove season.
But like, United now, they're concerned about the striker thing because they've let their targets all sign elsewhere. Whereas if they didn't sign Ronaldo, they would have went harder for a striker this summer.
Also, failing this season post Ronaldo put them in a worse position to compete for those guys as well. All right, so I've got to wrap up the podcast here, but
it's a good episode of Groundhog Day.
Yeah. I mean, if you were wondering why we're in a bad mood to start, why we weren't super energized to start, there's 50 minutes of talking about what Manchester United need. So we'll be back next week. We're recording on Friday next week, so this episode will have to hold everyone over until then, but we will be back. We're going to try and be on a more regular schedule now. Preseason will start to pick up. Transfers will be finalized. Season is fast approaching. So we're back. Thanks for listening.